This is the first lecture on the immune system, and it's all about defending your body, because you need to defend against invaders like bacteria, viruses, and other pathogens. Fungi can attack you, and our bodies really have two levels of defense. One level is called the non-specific defense mechanisms, and the other is called the specific defense mechanisms, and we'll discuss each one of them in turn. The specific defense mechanism is really called the immune system, and that's really interesting. Today we're going to talk about the non-specific defense mechanisms. So when I say that they're non-specific, I mean that essentially it's a defense that's not specialized against any particular kind of invader. It's sort of a general defense against any kind of pathogen, whether it be bacteria, virus, fungi, whatever. And there's two levels of non-specific defense. The first line is barriers. And the second line are internal defenses, and we'll get to those a little bit later in this lecture. So let's start off with barriers and talk about what barriers are all about. Barriers, I mean, kind of the analogy, if you want to think of the real simple analogy. Back in the Middle Ages, you know, you'd have these castles with walls around them. That's essentially, when you think about the wall around a castle, that is like a barrier. And that's essentially what the barrier is for us, to protect us. Because you need something that's just right out there to protect any kind of pathogen from entering the body. Now, the obvious first line of defense is going to be the skin. And obviously it covers our whole body. It's very protective, very important. We have sweat glands in our skin, as part of our skin, and they produce oily and acidic liquids, and these also inhibit pathogens. So they're not just to cool you down, but they're also to protect your body from invaders. You also have mucous membranes. Now, this may sound odd to you, but you know, everyone realizes that skin is on the outside of our body. It protects our body from having things come inside. But what might be surprising to you is if you think about our digestive tract, is kind of outside of our body too, right? All the way from our mouth to our anus is really sort of kind of outside our body, in the sense that if something, if we eat some food and it just goes all the way through, it never comes into our body because there's this protective coating of cells all the way along the digestive tract called the mucous membranes. So we have these epithelial cells, and that's kind of like the internal skin, if you will, okay? And these mucous membranes will line the digestive tract, like I've just described, the respiratory system, and the genital urinary tract. And they will secrete all kinds of fluids, among them saliva, tears, nasal secretions, and so forth. And you can actually think about it, like when you get a runny nose, you think, is that a good thing or a bad thing? Well, it's actually a good thing, because the runny nose, the mucous membranes inside your nose, or your nasal cavity, are producing these secretions, which hopefully will keep any kind of pathogens from coming into your body. So there's a reason that that happens. So it may be sort of inconvenient for you and maybe unpleasant, but it's actually trying to protect you. Now, these secretions contain an enzyme called lysozyme. Can you all say that for me?
Lysozyme,
very good. And this enzyme digests the cell walls of bacteria. So basically, you want to kill the bacteria, and one easy way to do that is just to eat through the cell wall. And that's what this enzyme does. Also, the mucous membranes produce mucus, which is this sort of viscous fluid that can trap pathogens. And so that prevents pathogens from getting into your body. And sometimes you will, you know, cough up this mucus or blow your nose in the mucus. And that's not a bad thing, because you're trying to capture those pathogens and then get them out of your body. Now, another important element, particularly in your respiratory system, is cilia. And these are small hairs. They line the respiratory system, and they beat away from the lungs. So they're pushing things from, you know, the lungs out of the body. And they basically move mucus and particles or anything away from the lungs. Really important. Another important first line of defense is gastric juice. We learned about this earlier in the course, that your stomach is full of hydrochloric acid. It's got a pH of about 1 or 2, which is pretty nasty. And the reason it's there, it's really obvious. If you think about it, if anything that you eat or swallow goes down your esophagus, the first place it comes to is your stomach. So that's great entryway into your body. So you've got a big vat of hydrochloric acid waiting to just, you know, get those little guys, little pathogens that come down through your esophagus. And that's why it's there. Now, if you think about it, and also the, you know, gastric juice helps digestion, right? It helps particularly in terms of denaturing proteins. But another important element is to kill off pathogens. Now, you guys know, I think, that there's an important thing that has to happen when the gastric juice leaves the stomach and goes into the small intestine. What is that? What has to happen? Yeah.
I think it's with a base to.
Yeah, no, exactly. There's a, it's hit with a base, and the base neutralizes it, right? And so you want the digestive material to go from being acidic to about neutral, because your small intestine is not, it's not made to deal with a very acidic, it would get destroyed by acid. So you want to have sort of a neutral pH going through your small intestine, okay? Now, let's go to the second line of defenses. So that's, you can kind of imagine, those are good first line. Let's say that pathogens penetrate the skin or the mucous membranes. Now they've gone through that barrier. When this happens, the body draws in, you know, up its second line of defense, which are leukocytes. And let's see if any of you know the derivation. Does anyone know what leuko stands for? Anyone know that word derivation? Leuko. Well, leuko means white. Anybody know what cyte stands for? C-Y-T-E? Cyte? What does cyte stand for? Yeah. Cell. Yeah, exactly. So leukocyte are simply white cells or white blood cells. Okay? Now, the one thing I want you to be aware of right now before, as we begin this unit, is that there are many different kinds of white blood cells, many different kinds of leukocytes. And unlike red blood cells, there's only one kind of red blood cell, right? By the way, what do red blood cells do? Yeah. They basically carry oxygen around the body. They have that very important protein, hemoglobin. You know, lots of hemoglobin packed into red blood cells. But there's only one kind of red blood cell. White cells are very complicated. There's lots of different white blood cells, and I'm going to introduce you to them. But there's two categories, phagocytes and lymphocytes. So what I want you to think of, you know, because there's a lot of different white blood cells, they can become very confusing. But if you can just in your mind kind of categorize them into two categories, there's phagocytes and there's lymphocytes, and then kind of know the basic characteristics of each, that's going to be good. So we'll begin with the phagocytes. And once again, let's do a word derivation. Does anyone know what the word phago means? Yeah, back there. Yeah, to eat, exactly. And cyte, we said, is cell. So phago means eat, cyte means cell. So these are cell eaters, and that's literally what they do. You guys might remember, well, you wouldn't remember because you weren't alive then, but you probably know, one of the very first video games that came out in the early 80s was a game called Pac-Man. And you may be aware of this game. But you know how the little Pac-Man would just kind of eat up, you know? That's kind of, whenever I think of phagocytes, I always think of Pac-Man, because that's kind of what they do. They kind of go around and eat everything up. And it's really the most important part of the second line of defense, because they literally go around and they just, you know, engulf things. And what's can be confusing, you don't need to memorize all these. There are six different kinds of phagocytes. I'm going to just let you see them, the names. You don't need to memorize the names. You just need to be aware. Like, if you see this name, oh, yeah, that's a phagocyte. But I don't expect you to bring it up out of your memory. Here the six are. Basophils, eosinophils, and neutrophils. So there's three phils, okay? And then there's mast cells, and there's monocytes, and there's macrophages. So these all are phagocytes. They have slightly different jobs to do, but they all essentially will eat stuff. The important one that I want you to know is the macrophage. Anybody know what the word or the term macro refers to? What's macro? Yeah, large or big. And so this is and phage obviously is eat, so this is a big eater. And they are the most famous of all the phagocytes, but they're not the most abundant. And they move around kind of like an amoeba. You guys remember amoebas. And they will sort of surround the particle that they're going to eat, like an amoeba does, and then it will become part of the internal part of the organism, and then it will just digest it inside. And so that's, and you can see two illustrations here. The upper illustration shows a phagocyte eating a red blood cell, and you're like, wait a minute, it shouldn't be eating a red blood cell. Well, it's also eating bacteria, which you can see there, which are orange. But remember that red blood cells only last 90 days. That's 3 months. And they have to be broken down and sort of recycled, essentially. And they're constantly being made all the time, 24/7, inside your bone marrow. So red blood cells are always being made, and they're always being destroyed. And then you can see another picture down here on the bottom with the phagocyte eating something. Another important second line of defense are called natural killer cells. And once again, it's another kind of white blood cell. It's not a phagocyte. Okay, so this is one that's not a phagocyte. But what they do is kind of interesting. I mean, they got a great name, natural killer cells. But what they do is they can identify virus-infected cells. So they kind of go cruising around your body, and they look for your own cells that have been infected by a virus. And they also look for some forms of cancer, some tumor cells. And what they do is they kill the cell by attacking the cell membrane and resulting in the lysing of the cell. And remember that the word lyse means to split open. So they just basically cause the cell to explode. Now, it's interesting because they kind of cruise around and you're like, wait a minute, so they're killing your cells. Yes, they are killing your cells. But the reason they're killing your cells is because your cells have a problem. Either they've been infected by a virus, so you want to kill that cell, or the cell has turned cancerous, so in that case you want to kill the cell as well. So they help in both arenas. The picture you see here is a cancer cell surrounded. The cancer cell is sort of an amber, and then the natural killer cells are in white. And they're in the process, presumably, of trying to kill that cancer cell. Yeah.
And they kill it faster than the cancer cell can probably.
Well, if they do, then that cancer won't spread, right? And if they can't, then the cancer will spread. And so I'm sure in some cases, yes, in some cases, no. So there's probably some cancer that that we all maybe would have had, but we don't, because the natural killer cells are cleaning them up. And then there's some that escape, and that's when people get cancer. Yeah. Another second line of defense are kind of interesting. It's called antimicrobial proteins. And there's two different kinds of systems, and I want to talk about each one of them. First of all, the word antimicrobial, against microbes, right? Against microbes. So these are proteins that will kind of kill bacteria, okay? The first system is called the complement system. About 20 different proteins associated with the complement system, and it's called the complement system because it complements other defenses. And what it does is it helps activate what is called the inflammatory response. I'm going to talk about the inflammatory response in a few slides, so kind of hold that idea. But for right now, in the inflammatory response, phagocytes will go to a site of infection, and these complement proteins help attract the phagocytes to the site of infection. Another thing they do is these complement proteins will attach to the microbes and kind of identify for the macrophages or the phagocytes, hey guys, this is a bacteria, come over and eat it. You know, kind of that's what they do. So they sort of identify, they flag these microbes. And the final thing they do, and you can see it here illustrated in my picture, which is kind of cool, is they actually can, you can see that that's a lipid bilayer, right? That's a lipid bilayer of a bacteria. But what's interesting is you can see the light tan-colored things embedded in the membrane. These are the complement proteins, and they've literally created a hole in the membrane, and when they do, all this fluid can come rushing into the cell, and then the cell just explodes, and that's how they kill the bacteria. Another group of antimicrobial proteins are called interferons, and this is kind of interesting. When cells are infected by a virus, it turns out that they produce small amounts of proteins called interferons. And what these proteins do is they increase the resistance of neighboring cells to infection by the same or other viruses, sort of a natural defense. And they seem to do this by inhibiting viral reproduction. And interferons were discovered, I think, in the late 70s, early 80s, if I have my facts straight on this one. And I believe they discovered interferons by, if I'm correct about this, I haven't checked recently, but I should double check, but people got these viral diseases, and when they got a viral disease, they wouldn't get another viral disease. And so researchers were wondering, well, why? Is there some protective mechanism? If you get one viral disease during that time, you won't get another? And they identified this particular protein would sort of protect people that had another viral infection. And, of course, the great thing that was believed back in the early 80s is, oh, my gosh, now we've got a very important tool to protect us against viruses, kind of like antibiotics protect us against bacteria. You know, the belief was in the early 80s, interferon will protect us from viruses. And it didn't work out that way. I mean, we do use interferon in clinical therapy in some cases, but it isn't the wonder drug, let's say, that antibiotics have been, right? You know, when antibiotics were discovered in the 1920s, 1930s, we had no protection against, nothing really great could protect us against bacterial infections. But when Alexander Fleming noticed on his petri dishes that this fungus called penicillin killed bacteria, that was a huge breakthrough. And then they basically derived this chemical from this fungus. That's what penicillin is. And that was like a big breakthrough because now we had a way of protecting ourselves against bacteria. But at the time, they had no way to protect against viruses. And we still struggle to protect ourselves against viruses. They're much trickier to deal with. And there was, at one time, it was believed that interferon would be the great hope to protect against viruses, and it hasn't been. It can help us in some ways, but it's not what it was thought to be originally. Okay, let's talk about the inflammatory response. The word inflammo means to set fire, and that's where we get the word flame from, and so forth. Okay, let's imagine that damage to tissue occurs. Like, let's say there's some kind of break in the skin. let's say you cut your hand, for instance. We'll just make it real simple. What immediately happens is specific white blood cells, and I'm referring now to phagocytes, two particular phagocytes, basophils and mast cells that are in the tissue will be stimulated to release a chemical called histamine. Now, you guys probably recognize histamine because you've heard of what? Antihistamines. So histamine is a very important chemical in this process, as you'll see. Histamine, in turn, causes the capillaries right around there, wherever the cut was, let's say, to dilate. And when the capillaries dilate, they get bigger, and they start leaking. And when they leak, first of all, the dilation causes an increased blood flow to the area. So you get more blood, which means you bring more white blood cells to the area, which is important. And blood plasma will leak out, and phagocytes will leak out of the capillary into the surrounding tissue, which is important because the tissue now has been exposed to the outside. We've broken the skin barrier, and bacteria can now get inside the body, which is not a good thing. And what happens is you'll start to get the area that's been affected will start to swell a little bit. It may become red. It will actually become warm, hence the word inflammo, and tender. Also, in that same area, complement proteins are released. And remember what I just said, the complement proteins are an attractant to phagocytes. So it basically says, hey, phagocytes, any phagocytes around here, come here because there's going to be bacteria entering the body and we need your help. And the phagocytes then start engulfing all the microbes and any damaged cells, just like I told you, like Pac-Man, cleaning up the mess. Now, a picture's worth a thousand words, and this is from your book. I really like this three-step... Oh, actually, this is not from your book. This is from another book. But it really does a nice job of explaining the inflammatory response. On the left picture, you'll see a splinter has broken the skin, the first line of defense, and you'll notice that they're in purple. There are the purple represent bacteria that are now going to have access to the body. You'll notice that these, there are some cells here, which are mast cells or basophils, and they will start releasing histamine, which is represented here by black dots. The histamine will then cause, and you can see this in the next painting, will cause the capillary to start dilating. And meanwhile, you'll also notice in red, complement protein is being released. And that's going to attract phagocytes to leave the capillaries and go into the tissue and start engulfing bacteria. And also, because of this swelling of the capillaries, this area will become warmer, it will become red, it will become tender, it may swell up a little bit. And that's, if you've ever had an infection or the inflammatory response, you know what I'm talking about. And then finally, in the last pane, you'll see that things are kind of getting back to normal. The white blood cells, the phagocytes, have cleaned up the debris and a lot of the bacteria, and the capillary has no longer dilated, and then the splinter is all taken care of, and hopefully that skin will start growing back over. So that's sort of the process. Okay. I want to talk about blood cells because, obviously, it's super important in what we're talking about. All blood cells are produced from in the bone marrow. So in all of you right now and for your whole life, 24/7, you are constantly making blood cells, red blood cells and white blood cells and platelets. And they're all being made from the sort of the uber cell that from which they all come, which is called a pluripotent hematopoietic cell. So let's make sure we can say this, everybody. Pluripotent hematopoietic cell. Very good. Okay. Now, before we move on, I want to distinguish between totipotent and pluripotent, because we're going to see these terms not only in this chapter, but in a future chapter. So let's try to make sure we understand. Toti comes from the word totus, which means entire or total. It's actually where we get our word total from. Potent comes from the word potus, which means powerful. So this means entirely or totally powerful. Now, what does that mean? These are cells that can produce the entire spectrum of cell types. They can produce every cell in the body, any cell they can produce. Not only can they produce any cell in the body, but they can actually produce a whole new organism. So a totipotent cell is the, you know, you're hearing a lot in the news, the embryonic stem cells. Embryonic stem cells are totipotent. You can actually take an embryonic stem cell and you can make an entire new organism from that embryonic stem cell because it's totipotent. So in animals, the only cell that's truly totipotent is the fertilized egg, which is the zygote, right? And some of its immediate descendants. And it depends on the organism, you know, like, are they cells that are 3 days old or 5 days old or 7 days old or 10 days, whatever it happens to be, that are still totipotent. At some point, they no longer become totipotent. They'll be pluripotent, maybe, but they won't be totipotent. We'll talk more about this. In plants, what's interesting is that the cells remain totipotent throughout the plant's lifetime. So you don't even need... What's interesting about plants is you've probably seen this before. You just need a cutting. Take a cutting of a plant, and you can grow a whole new plant from it. And I remember this was dramatically illustrated to me when I was on my first trip to Africa in the mid-'80s. I was in a country called Togo, and we were visiting an agricultural research station, and they were propagating coffee. And it was so cool because we went into their greenhouses, and all they had were, they had taken leaves from the coffee plants, and they actually had just cut the leaf in half and put it in a little bit of soil, and they were growing roots. And then they were going after, you know, so many months, they're just going to plant these and grow a whole new coffee plant. I just thought that was, like, so cool that they could do that. And so plants, turns out that, you know, they pretty much remain totipotent for their whole lives. Now, so how does this relate to pluripotent? Well, pluri means, you know, pluris. Pluri comes from pluri, or pluris, which means many or several, like e pluribus unum, you know, that expression. And so this means many or several powerful, pluripotent. And these are cells that can give rise to a restricted spectrum of mature cell types. So maybe not every cell in the body, but a whole bunch of different kinds of cells. For instance, let me walk through what we're talking about today. The original cell from which all blood is made is called, the original blood cell is called the pluripotent hematopoietic cell. We talked about that a few slides ago. Now, what I want you to realize is from this original cell, all the different kinds of blood cells can be produced. This particular cell cannot make any cell or any tissue because it's not totipotent. Remember, it's just pluripotent. It's many powerful, not totally powerful. So we call it hematopoietic, and the word hemato refers to blood. You know, you probably hemo, right? Blood. And poetic means to make. By the way, the word poetic is where we get the word poem. And so the word poem means to make. Kind of interesting. So anyhow, if we do a rough translation of this whole, you know, crazy long three-word thing called the pluripotent hematopoietic cell, What it really is, here's my little translation, it's a cell that is powerful because it makes many types of blood cells. So that's what we mean by pluripotent hematopoietic cell. Okay, you got that? Now, once again, picture's worth a thousand words. That'll be this following slide. One more thing. Blood cells can be divided into three categories in general. One are red blood cells, and you should know the official sort of technical term, which is erythrocytes. And erythro is the Greek word for red, so erythrocyte. And they simply transport oxygen and carbon dioxide. Platelets, which are simply cell fragments without a nuclei, and they basically initiate blood clotting, very important. And then the third are white blood cells, leukocytes, and leuko, of course, means white, and they defend against invaders. So these are the three types of blood cells that exist in human body. And what's interesting is that of the white blood cells, they're certainly the most complicated. There are many different kinds. And like I mentioned at the beginning of the lecture, we can divide them into two categories, either phagocytes or lymphocytes. And I'm going to show you an illustration in the next slide. Let's take a look at it, of what this looks like. Now, on this crazy illustration, don't worry, you don't need to memorize this. But I really do think it's helpful for me to show you kind of the derivation of all the blood cells, because then it will help you maybe remember them better. So let's kind of talk it through. All blood comes from the bone marrow, okay? So, and there is a cell in your bone marrow called the pluripotent hematopoietic cell, and that is the cell from which all blood cells are derived. Now, there's two kind of lineages. There's the one that goes up here, the myeloid progenitor cell, and then the lymphoid progenitor cell. You don't need to know this stuff. I'm just kind of showing you. But what's interesting is if you go up from the myeloid progenitor cell, you get your red blood cells, which are your erythrocytes, and your platelets. But what you also get, okay, so remember, and this is interesting because I just mentioned in the last slide that we divide blood cells into three categories: red blood cells, platelets, and then everything else, which is a white blood cell. What's interesting about this illustration is that the white blood cells are all these. And so some of the white blood cells came from the same original cell that the red blood cells came from, and the other white blood cells came from this lymphoid progenitor cell. So, you know, it's a strange classification the way we've done it. This is the way they actually are produced, but we've classified them in these different ways. Let me just finish. So what I do want to show you is the group of cells up here that come from what's called the myeloid progenitor cell, which also gives us the red blood cells and the platelets. All these guys are the phagocytes. Remember, the phagocytes, all these eat. They're like Pac-Man. So all, you know, the basophils, eosinophils, neutrophils. Remember I told you the three phils? And then mast cells, monocytes, macrophages. You know, these all are like Pac-Man. Down here, all these are called lymphocytes. Now, what's interesting, and we're not going to get into it today, but we will in the next couple lectures, these lymphocytes, the two big ones are B cells and T cells, and these are our friends because they do a lot of the heavy lifting in our immune system and protect us from nastiness, and they're super important. And we're going to talk a lot more about them over the next couple of lectures. Okay? That's it.